gentlemen, and welcome to episode 12 of Capes and Commentaries. I'm Nathan Kennedy, joined by Tank Tops, Tyler Baker.
Back That's my mutant power. Is my mutation of Tank Tops.
You're just sitting there. You just make them change colors on demand.
Yeah, I can just change my colors of Tank Tops. It's a pretty useless mutation. You know, I mean, it really wouldn't stop Sabretooth or Mr. Sinister in a fight, but you know, they probably might stop and like, what the hell's wrong with your Tank Tops? It's the distraction. That's the key.
But we're our next episode here is the first episode of X-Men. I know Tyler's excited about this one. It was like once we decided that this was going to be a little thing that we were going to do for the channel, he was like, we got to do X-Men at some point. I was like, all right, man. And I think we were kind of holding off a little bit because we were wanting to see, you know, how soon Larry Houston might be joining us, because he has a huge impact on this show. Like he's been on a lot of the other animated shows that we've watched, but he's actually in the director's seat for most of, if not all of the X-Men episodes.
I think the first four seasons, Larry is this one in particular. And then he was, you know, pretty much the man in charge for the next three seasons. And the season five, I don't think he had as much to do with it. I think from what I can remember, if you would like to hear more about that, I did an interview with him called Fans of Mutant Power, which is available on Podbean and on YouTube. It's almost about a 2-hour interview talking to Larry about his time at Marvel Animation, Pride of the X-Men pilot, and his run on the X-Men animated series as well. Pretty in-depth, ask a lot of questions, why we got the certain stories we did in the first season, like, you know, like with introduction to the Four Horsemen of Apocalypse and Days of Future Past and Juggernaut. A lot of big stuff happening in that first season, and he explains why all those big stories took place so early on. So it's a great interview. Hopefully we can get him on for some commentaries for the show. Because God knows, I would just love to hear him just sit quietly and let Larry say whatever he wants.
He could basically probably, because I need to go and watch more of those interviews that you had with him, but he seems like the kind of guy that would be like, he can recall the exact day, the exact minute, I remember doing this, and seems very detailed.
He's got a very great attention to detail, loves X-Men, loves comic books, loves cartoons. You can see his office. He's got action figures of every cartoon that he worked on. If there was a toy line, he's got action figures from it on top of, you know, other stuff that was not necessarily animated related or animation related, you know, from the Batman toys, you know, Master of the Universe, you name it. God, it's makes you so envious of what that guy's office looks like with all the toys he's got on his plate. Jesus. But hopefully Larry gets a hold of this, and hopefully he'll see this. And
the fun thing as we will continue on past this to do more episodes of X-Men is, one of the main problems that I always had with the show as a kid is it seemed like the only episodes that I would ever be able to catch was the two-parter that we're going to start
will say
now.
And I remember that drove kid too, but because I think that was the pilot, and they were still working. And we asked Larry about that, because I told him, I said, when the show came out, all they did was play Night of the Sentinels for several Saturdays straight, and you're waiting for a new episode, like, damn it! And he said that was done for a reason, because they were trying to get the rest of the series ready to be, you know, released on Fox at that time. So yeah, it drove me nuts too to see Night of the Sentinels over and over and over again.
Yeah, I honestly dropped off kind of quick from this show, because I would tune in every Saturday. I'm like, I've already seen this. It was between Night of the Sentinels and the Phoenix Saga, which was a 3-4-parter.
Oh no, 5 parts. And then five you have the Phoenix Saga, which was 5 parts too.
Yeah, so it would just be those in a constant rotation. I was like, where's the other content? Where are the other episodes?
As a kid, when the show came out, I just couldn't see Magneto. Like, that's all I wanted to see was, like, when's Magneto going to show? And more Wolverine, more Sabretooth. So when you only get one episode, having to wait as a kid for one episode every week, once a week, I mean, it was draining. If when you get up early morning, you're sitting through Eat the Cat and Bobby's World and all the other stuff, you may not be that interested. So you can sit and wait for, I think it was 10:30 or 11 o'clock on set. I think it was 11 o'clock and waiting and waiting and waiting. And it's a rerun. You're like, damn it. You know, but like,
or when, I mean, you could always get ahead of it. It wasn't like the TV Guide channel, but before that, when
the preview channel.
When it just used to drop the slow bricks by brick. But actually, even then, it didn't even have like an episode description in the corner like TV Guide channel would later do. It would just tell you like, hey, what's this coming is coming on. Yeah. Well, never mind that. Shit, kids today, you do not know how good you have it in that regard. Like, you can go on Hulu or Netflix or whatever and just pick anything you want and just watch it. Like, even the new stuff that comes out now will drop on Hulu most of the times, like the next day or a week later. But at least then, you know, you never have to worry about reruns.
Yeah. Back in our day, not knowing. I mean, sometimes they would advertise all new X-Men this Saturday morning. But a lot of times, especially in the first season, you didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, that they'll play a couple of new episodes. All right, time for a rerun. Oh.
And we had to walk 10 miles in the snow to get to school, too.
Yeah, just like people before us, we used to bitch and complain about.
Well, they had to walk 50. We only had to walk 10.
Yeah. So things did get a little bit easier for our generation. But still, it was a great sense of appreciation that when an episode like The Unstoppable Juggernaut dropped, and you didn't know it. I didn't know it was that. And that's an episode I can't wait to do because that's one of my absolute favorites because it was such a big deal for an episode that featured Juggernaut and Colossus in the same episode. And I remember what I was doing that day. It just blew my mind. I just couldn't believe to have that kind of not one, but two heavy hitters. Oh, two of my favorite characters in X-Men showing in the same episode. Oh, it was a dream. So, but the show still holds up. In my opinion, it beats anything to this day that we've gotten from the live action films. Like, the live action films have their moments, a decent film here and there, but overall, I mean, nothing compares to the quality of this animated series. And I say that from the heart. I'm not saying that in hopes that, you know, I'm just saying it just to like say it. Like, no. I still look at this show as the definitive interpretation of the X-Men. That thanks to Larry and the people that worked with them that were such X-Men fans and want to make sure that this is straight out of the comic. The stories are all interpreted just how they were in the comics. They're not taking liberties. I mean, hell, if you go and read the Phoenix Saga or you go and read Juggernaut's first appearance, about that whole backstory about his relationship with Charles, I mean, you see that later in the Juggernaut. I think it's called Juggernaut Returns. Like, all that is depicted prominently. Like, man, it's just like reading the comic book. So, good stuff, man. So we'll shut up here and get this commentary rolling here.
All righty. Give us that countdown, sir.
All right.
Also check the description. I'm probably just going to say that every time, but make sure.
Just say it every time. Yeah, just in case.
Yeah, if you're with us on YouTube, click that link in the description. That way you can watch along with us as we go along. If you're on Podbean, head on over to YouTube. Give us a subscribe and ring that bell. Join us live in the chat room. Hang out with the rest of these
in the danger room.
Yeah, in the danger room. That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. And as we start this up, we'll get ready to see probably the greatest opening for any like superhero action show. I'd say this opening is even more epic possibly than Batman the Animated Series because of the charge of the music and the scenes that are depicted. Not I mean, just saying I would put it up there on the same level of quality because I mean it's pretty damn energizing. The X-Men intro. I mean,
I would agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, theme wise, especially it probably is my favorite theme out of all the ones.
Yeah. I will say it is my favorite. I mean, you can listen to the theme by itself.
Yeah. It can be used for comedic effect when Mongo's running down the aisle in slow motion.
This day, I do think of that.
And Same here.
Yeah. It doesn't take away from the excitement of the theme, but when you play it next to Mongo McMichael running to the ring, God, it's funny as hell. Just for him to be like botching the ring, trying to, you know, Sting's trying to sell for him, like Mongo can't do anything right. Botchamania fans will know what we're talking about with our Mongo McMichael discussion.
Right, easily the worst horseman. I would like Paul Roman was a better horseman.
Hell yeah, and Paul Roman, what isn't that? I mean, yeah, I mean it was great, but yes. I definitely would say Paul Roman was a hell of a lot better. levels better.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway.
3, 2, 1, play. Ah, here we go. In all its glory, the Blackbird, Rogue, and Storm, everybody.
I still don't like Cyclops. I've never...
I've almost told anybody that doesn't like Cyclops, I tell them, watch the animated series, and you will like Cyclops. I just tell everybody, Rogue kicks ass in this show.
Man, Rogue's like, I always had a huge crush on her.
Oh, she's hot. And you watch her in the show, and you're like, God, the movie, she doesn't do jack shit.
And Gambit's just a smooth badass.
Steals almost every scene he's in. This was my introduction to a lot of the X-Men. Like, I was familiar with Wolverine, Cyclops, Professor X, and I think Beast, but it was my introduction to Gambit and Rogue, Jubilee. Of course, when this came out, Gambit and Jubilee were relatively newer characters to the show.
And honestly, too, anytime I watch this, I always wanted to just go play the arcade game. I just wanted to run to Walmart and play the arcade game.
Yeah. And I didn't know this was Sabretooth when the show came out, because I was not aware of that look of Sabretooth. I had not seen this, because they don't name check him yet. He's just seen. And I think it wasn't till a few episodes. I think with Cold Vengeance. Or not Cold Vengeance. Or maybe is it Deadly Reunions? When Sabretooth is working for Magneto.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Cold Vengeance takes place.
Now, what are your thoughts on Jubilee?
I think, you know, I feel like this is similar to the Pride of the X-Men pilot, where you introduce a young mutant who's unaware of what, or is afraid of what she can do, thinks she's the only one. So she's kind of like your gateway into the world of the X-Men. And I don't mind Jubilee. I find Kitty Pryde's portrayal in Pride of the X-Men just, oh, this is a cool shot of the Sentinel flying. I remember thinking that was Magneto when it first came. I'm like, oh, it's Magneto. I'm like, and then I didn't know, what is this? I had no idea what Sentinel was. But no, I like Jubilee. I don't find her to be irritating. Go watch Kitty Pryde's portrayal in Pride of the X-Men, and the voice actress who plays her like makes her almost unbearable to listen to. Whereas Jubilee, I like her. I understand why people don't like her, but I certainly don't find her to be an obnoxious character at all.
She's like a teenager. I would put me in the camp that kind of leans a little towards her being obnoxious, but I get it from the standpoint of like she is sort of that angsty teen that's trying to figure all this shit out. Do you think that there's any validity? I don't know if you asked Larry about this or, you know, the whole thing. Hopefully this doesn't put you on too much of a rant, but that the X-Men is sort of like words are sort of failing me, but like a gay people.
Do you think that
makes sense? Has anyone ever really come out that's been like creators of the comics, or, you know, if you even asked Larry about it or anything, do you think that there is connecting the dots of like, oh yeah, that I could see that? Or do you think it's just pure coincidence?
That's just something that it's a matter of, well, just for people in general, not just members of the gay and lesbian community, but people of any minority, whether it's a color of skin or sexual orientation, or just people in general, people that feel like they're outcasts for their beliefs or their interests. I feel like the X-Men could work for any man or woman walking this planet that feels that they're different and looked upon for their beliefs or their how they look or how they dress. I think that's what makes them so likable. But then people said, well, you got Spider-Man and Hulk and Captain America. No one is like, but, you know, it's the X-Men have their own universe. Yes, they're part of the Marvel Universe. They're all connected. But this is the story they're telling of tolerance and everything. And this is such a cool introduction to Gambit here, being the suave guy that he is. It's just flirting with any beautiful woman he comes in contact with. But I just think the X-Men works for any scenario. I think that's what makes them such a likable and interesting group.
Yeah, no, I think it's cool that you know, people have kind of made that interpretation. I guess I was just sort of wondering, too, if you think that the creators sort of had that in mind when they were doing it, or if it's just if it's just a thing that, you know, people have sort of latched onto, like, I don't know. I'm kind of running around in circles here.
A product of the reaction people had to it, because I don't believe that was Stan Lee and Jack Kirby's intention when they were just trying to create another super team, and just making the mutants that they're born with these powers and that they're outcasts and stuff, and they use it for the common good.
Also, I'm gonna say that Rogue looks amazing in that dress.
Gosh, she does with her white and brown brunette hair. Oh, she's so hot. And I love Rogue's southern accent. I mean, it just makes her that. And Storm looks sexy as hell too. God, I mean, all the X-Men from Jean, Storm, Rogue is definitely my favorite, but Storm would be a close second because, I mean, she just looks hot in any outfit she's in.
Did you like Halle Berry's portrayal?
What's that?
Did you like Halle Berry's portrayal of Storm? Did you think it was okay?
In the first film, I thought she did all right. Aside from the what happens to a Tobin struck by lightning, I think everyone laughed at that. I mean, she looked great. She looked the part, but I feel like when her popularity got bigger, I just felt like they were shoehorning Halle Berry. And to me, Halle Berry is, she's not the greatest actress in the world. I think she's, she's fine. But she did all right. I wouldn't say she was a dead weight in any of the X-Men films. I mean, because I think for the most part, everybody wants to see Wolverine kick ass and stuff like that as well. If anything, I felt like Cyclops really got shortchanged because, not that it was James Marsden's fault, but I felt like Cyclops just wasn't given that much to do. Rogue definitely got the short end of the stick. When you watch the cartoon, you see how much ass Rogue kicks in every episode and the stuff she's given to do. Poor Anna Paquin just was given nothing to do except stand around and look hot and be Iceman's girlfriend. That's really bad.
And be kind of mopey.
Yeah, that's about it. Yeah, Gambit, so cool. And I remember asking Larry, too, because I'd asked him, how come, Colossus and Iceman and Nightcrawler weren't shown as, prominent members? And it was pretty much just kind of picking a certain group, bring them in at some point, especially with Gambit and Jubilee being the newer members in the comics. They'd been in for a brief period. It would make more sense from a marketing standpoint that you see these characters in the cartoon. Oh, they're currently in the comic book as well. But even though Iceman and Nightcrawler and Colossus were in the books as well, it makes sense that you would want to market these newer X-Men characters since they are newer in the comics as well. But it was just a choice. It was just, I don't think it was anything like, because Larry likes all the X-Men. It wasn't like, Colossus, he's okay. Iceman's weak. Nightcrawler, because when they all show up, they're all given great episodes. So I think it was just a creative choice, nothing more. Because he explains that in the Fans of Mutant Power episode, a little bit more detailed. Yeah. So this is the best interpretation of Cyclops, too, like his look, everything. I mean, this is the
my favorite how he had that little shiny ding on his visor.
Yeah, and I love that when he's getting ready to, the optic blast will kind of burst just a little bit to kind of let you know, all right, I'm ready to go into action. If you want to go, we'll go. Yeah, and this kind of has similar beats to Pride of the X-Men as well. Jubilee gets loose and starts running around and kind of gets introduced, and Kitty Pryde is brought in, introduced to the X-Men and the Danger Room and everything. So there are similar good storytelling moves, because this is what you would want to do. If any newcomer, they need to be introduced to this world, and that's what Jubilee is. And it just works well from an introduction standpoint of what they're trying to do here. I remember watching this where's Wolverine? When's Wolverine going to show up?
I mean, that's kind of... for me watching this, it was Wolverine and Gambit were the two main guys for me.
Same here. I love Beast as well. I thought Beast.
No, yeah, Beast was always cool.
But for me and my brother both, we were both big Wolverine and Gambit fans, and we really grew to like Cyclops as well. Like we just liked his.
I could never get around to Cyclops. He kind of had the Leonardo syndrome for me.
Well,
too much
I,
like
I get that.
Look
he's
at
the
me.
Leader.
Yeah,
and I get that, but. He was a likable leader. And of course, everyone likes Wolverine. People don't want to see people cross Wolverine. And if they do, you want to see them get their ass kicked. But Cyclops was so likable in the show that I liked when they would butt heads, but they would inevitably have to work together.
What are your thoughts on Morph?
There's references to some of the other X-Men characters there. Morph was Magneto. Morph was fine, and of course he was created for the purposes of just kind of having a character that was going to be kind of quote unquote killed off, because Larry talks about too that they created the character for that purpose. Like he, you know, was not an original X-Men character of any kind, just created simply for the show. And I think as a kid, I had an idea that he was not an actual character. He was just kind of made up for the show. And of course, was brought back by Mr. Sinister later on, I think in season two, I think somewhere in season two, when Mr. Sinister comes in as a prominent villain with the Nasty Boys. And here we are, in our introduction to the Danger Room. Gambit's like, there you are, Petit. There's no place for you. So cool.
Man,
we got so excited when Wolverine burst through the wall here. Gambit says, there you are, Wolverine. Like, oh, man, badass. So cool. Yeah. That's an introduction for Wolverine. Silent and ready to kick some ass. Oh, man. And the voice actor, his name escapes me, plays Wolverine, but that is Wolverine, even more than Hugh Jackman. Kevin Conroy's Batman, the gentleman playing Wolverine, to me, that's what I hear when I read a Wolverine comic, and that's Wolverine, man. Not just from I grew up on it, but that's just the quintessential voice of Wolverine. And I was always more partial to the yellow and blue outfit, and then I got and had a greater appreciation for the maroon and gold. But something so sharp looking about the yellow and blue outfit, it just looks so badass.
I kind of wonder how comic fans felt about the change in outfit when they checked out the cartoon for the first time. I wonder if they were kind of upset by it. Like,
Introduced with the yellow and blue outfit and the Incredible Hulk, and then when he's brought in Giant Size X-Men, that's the suit he wore through the 70s and was given the maroon and gold in the 80s and wore that, pretty sure, through all the 80s, and they brought the yellow and blue back in the 90s. I'm sure, you know, people have their preferences and choices, but I think as long as the character is portrayed the way he should be, you can get away with Wolverine wearing civilian clothes all the time, or the purple and black outfit, or you know, the Weapon X, you know, look. I mean, it's
the Weapon X look was pretty cool though.
Yeah, and then you've got like the standard, you know, kind of blue and yellow outfit with no mask. I mean, he's had so many outfits. I mean, all the X-Men have Storm with her mohawk, which was a cool look. I mean, this is my favorite though. I mean, big, beautiful, long hair. That grabs my attention. But letting Rogue kind of be the voice to help Jubilee calm herself and realize that, you know, you're not alone in this. Join us and we'll help you use your powers. And it makes her a good mother character, you know, but also, you know, a force to be reckoned with. And she was given a lot of good stuff. I mean, everybody in this show. Like, I never felt that any of the cast members of this show were shortchanged. Like, everyone was given episodes or moments in a lot of the episodes to really shine and show what they can do, and given a lot of good material. And that's all thanks to Larry and the guys he worked with. And everyone was given such care. I always love these meetings where they're all sitting down and kind of butting heads on how the plan should go, and so it gets to where you just start watching. Oh yeah, I need to be talking here.
Well, that's the thing too. In other commentaries and films and things, there's always a little bit of dead air.
Yeah, but you just, you know, because I've heard some actual commentaries where like the director or actors will just sit quietly, and, like, say something. You know, they're listening to us for a reason. They're not listening to us so we can sit and breathe into the microphone.
I mean, I can start doing that if you want to. Just sit there.
That's quite all right. It's like Michael Myers breathing at the end of Halloween.
Yeah.
Mutant apprehended.
See, this part was always funny. It's like she's just running by. It's like, oh, okay. Yep, nope. Never mind that huge ass robot standing around. That tree's just tall enough to hide him.
Well, you gotta
but,
think.
But
she's,
then again,
she's panicking.
If I
she's
was in
freaking
a
out. She's not thinking.
Not paying attention to anything else.
Plus, you just don't know how to get good storytelling, introduction to characters, man. That's why you're not doing this. That's why we have like the masters like Larry Houston calling the shots here. They really captured the look and feel of the Sentinels as well, because, you know, this was my introduction to them, and to me, their voice, what they can do. I mean, that was this cartoon that's what made it so damn good, because it was an introduction to a whole generation of kids. You know, I was aware of the X-Men as a kid, but didn't know a whole lot about it until this cartoon came out, and I'd started collecting Marvel Universe trading cards and was getting into comic books and learning about who all these characters were in the X-Men, where next to Spider-Man was, my absolute favorite. So I could not wait for this show. When I saw ads for it in comic books and commercials for it, I mean, I was chomping at the bit for this show to come out. I couldn't wait for it. Oh, it drove me nuts. It's like we got it on VHS when they started releasing, and we picked our babysitter, like, I think, had ordered it for us.
Damn.
And we got
that
it.
That was awfully nice of her.
Yeah, she would do. I mean, she'd buy G.I. Joes for her birthday, wrestling figures for Christmas, rent videos for us, and I remember after we watched this, me and my brother went outside to play X-Men, and he wanted to play it a certain way, and I wanted to play it another way, and we got mad at each other, and I quoted Wolverine saying, "I go where I want to go," and he's like, "Shut up, man."
Well, how are you guys? How are you wanting to play, and how is he wanting to play?
I can't remember. It was, you know, we're you know. We were just kind of butting heads on how we wanted to play and disagreeing, like Cyclops and Wolverine all right here. And he thought I was a dork because I was quoting Wolverine. I'm like, I'm being like tough, like Wolverine. Get out of my face, little brother.
Man, you kind of had a jacket like that at one point, too.
Yeah, I did. They even tried to go the whole, like, you know, mutton chops there that Wolverine has, too.
Yeah, dude, you should grow some mutton chops. That'd be pretty good.
And sport the puffy jacket, a toothpick, maybe get a fake cigar. I like how Beast is walking there. Kind of giving like a brief little backstory on these, their history here of Rogue and Beast. And
yeah.
There's such sincerity in everybody's performance in this show. And people say it's a cartoon, but you don't get it. You know, voice actors, they're portraying a character. They have to be believable. And
yeah,
really
I mean, if they weren't, a lot of those Pixar films wouldn't be as good as they are, you know?
Exactly. They can look good, but if you don't buy the voices
and the emotion behind it, then yeah.
Yeah, then I don't care how much money you sunk into it. It's like a brief fart that comes and goes. It's not memorable. It didn't leave an impact. You're just kind of like...
How does a fart leave an impact? Exactly, like, you know, are you trying?
Like, good grief, boy, that was big. Or, oh, man, it stunk so bad. Like, you don't forget that. But if it's fart, huh.
I don't smell anything.
Yeah, exactly. No impact. No emotion. Sorry, Larry. Don't mean to associate X-Men with farts, but...
You have some of the weirdest ways of wording stuff sometimes.
Hey, that's my shtick.
Teeing off like a golf ball in a tile bathroom. Like, just what?
Yeah. It doesn't have to make sense. We're not professional. No one's paying us. We just say whatever we want.
Not yet, anyway.
Yeah, not yet, anyway. But we just want people to know we're fans just like anybody else, and we're trying to enjoy this stuff and make it sound like, you know, you're sitting around with a couple of buddies watching cartoons together. Because as the adults that we are, that's what we want to do. Sit around and watch X-Men cartoons and main cartoons and talk about how great they are. And the sound effect of Wolverine's claws coming
out. Yeah, that's always, yeah.
God, it's like, how often do you like hold your fist up and just envision, you know, claws bursting out of your knuckles like Ray, you know,
just
take
rips
on
through that door.
Yeah.
I love the attention to detail putting the hair on his shoulders and arms because of Wolverine being such a hairy guy.
Yeah.
It's just a nice attention to detail to throw in there. Just being able to see everybody's skills, like Storm's really taking charge here. I mean, she's such a prominent leader of the X-Men. I mean, Cyclops is the fun, but to me, like Storm is up there with Cyclops in terms of leadership, and it's just fun to see her powers used not just to create storms and winds, but used for security purposes. Very smart. You know, hell, I would date Rogue even with her, you know, mutant affliction there of not being able to touch you. I'd find some way of working around that. I don't know how, but I'd make sure I take care of her needs once in some form or fashion. I'd be like Gambit too, you know. Because Gambit's always it's like, oh, it'd be well worth it. I'm like, hell yeah, it would be.
And there, this it's already it's over already.
Over, yeah. I'm like, God, I forgot, like. Yeah, we're just doing the one episode. And I always love the ending here. Me and my brother used to laugh, too, that the credits would stop when we get to Jubilee, as if, like, if you're saying, like, Jubilee stinks.
I mean, you know, compared to everybody else, and I know, you know what they're trying to do in regards to, but, you know, compared to everyone else, she is sort of just.
Well, when you got Wolverine, Beast, Storm, Cyclops, Rogue, Gambit, I mean, you know, her powers are, and I think, I mean, you wouldn't want a new character or a young teenage character to have a mutant power that outshines the rest of the roster. I mean, it's in terms of excitement. I mean, Gambit charges up stuff. And I mean, Jubilee fires charge from her hands too, but Gambit does it with such style and charisma. And he's got his staff too. And he's a Cajun, you know, he's awesome. And he's a womanizer. Who doesn't want to be a womanizer that can light up playing cards and throw them and blow stuff up? You know, so, but she serves her purpose and she's portrayed very well in the show. So, well, obviously, our next episode will be part two.
Really, I thought we were just gonna go ahead and do like a Garfield or something like that. Heathcliff.
I really don't think we could force that into Capes and Commentaries too.
Muppet
plus,
babies.
I got to figure out how to get Heathcliff. I know he's available on DVD, but
I was just kidding.
Oh, I know. Obviously, like we were serious about it.
No, yeah, obviously, episode 13's got to be part two.
And hell, I may even decide. Let's do a third X-Men episode and do the Unstoppable Juggernaut, or do the Cure, or I mean, God, there's so many great episodes to do, and I mean, there's continuity throughout this show, but I mean, we could do the Island, but I'm so excited to do the Juggernaut episode, and of course, the Cure introduction of Apocalypse. God, there's just so many great episodes in season one. So we'll figure it out. Once we get episode two, Night of the Sentinels part two done, we'll figure out which one to go from. It will be from season one. We won't jump too far ahead. We'll keep it within season one. But, I mean, we got Enter Magneto to do. I mean, that's another kick-ass episode. God, man. Thanks a lot, Larry. I can't decide on what the hell to do here. It's like too many good episodes. So we'll figure it out, and hopefully you guys enjoyed this first part. We'll join us for more X-Men episodes and Batman Beyond and Spider-Man, Justice League. We have yet to do. We'll get around to Justice League, more G.I. Joe. We'll do Transformers. We'll cover it all here, people.
Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Man, oh, dude, I watched that first episode. I think I should reserve my thoughts for when we actually do Beyond Retro. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Yeah, ripping a new ass on Beyond Retro. That's where we say most of our rants anyway.
Yeah. But if you enjoyed this, go back and check out all of our other episodes. I can't even talk now. Capes and Commentaries. There we go. Watch all of our episodes of Beyond Retro. Check out Joe and Tyler's Masters of the Universe podcast, Fans of Power. I'll probably put a link down below because they got their own dedicated channel for that now. So that'll be good. That'll be some good stuff.
Yeah, if you like what we have to say, we got three shows going. There should be something in our realm of material that you enjoy, whether it's talking about movies of the 80s and 90s or the He-Man property or superhero cartoons. It's got to be something there. We feel like we got a little something for everybody.
Yeah, and it's going to get a little more interesting on Beyond Retro the next couple episodes as well, which it's going to be a lot of fun. So
yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us.
One of them will be. I don't know about the other one.
No, the other one's going to be fantastic. Yeah,
pit of despair.
it's going to be amazing. But thanks, you guys, for checking us out. Make sure you hit subscribe and hit the bell. If you're on Podbean or some other audio format, iTunes, whatever, check out the YouTube channel. Check out Tyler's mutant powers. He can change his tank tops.
I may be wearing neon green. I may be wearing dreamsicle orange. I may be wearing red or black. You have no idea the magnitude of this power.
See you guys next time.